I have a huge issue with the pharmaceutical industry and the food industry, because the food industry, the food lobby want to push crappy ultra-processed food, and now the pharmaceutical industry have got a pharmaceutical solution so you can carry on eating that shit food. Welcome to the Wellness Breakdown, where we examine the latest health trends and we discuss how lifestyle and nutrition can truly change the way you live.
I'm Eve Kalinic. I'm a nutritional therapist, author and consultant.
And I'm Rose Ferguson. I'm a functional medicine practitioner and also an author.
Yeah, we haven't always been in this game. Rose spent most of her youth on international catwalks as one of the most iconic 90s supermodels.
I'm not sure about that, but Eve had a very hectic career as a fashion PR. So we've definitely been there, we've done it, and there is no room here to preach.
Yeah, this isn't one of those waggy finger should do podcasts. We're here to dig into some of the wellness trends, figure out whether some of this stuff is just nonsense, and give our personal and professional opinions on some of it.
It amazes me that the global wellness industry is now worth over $5 trillion. So before you go out spending your hard-earned cash on the latest new thing, make sure you listen to the Wellness Breakdown first. The Wellness Breakdown is sponsored by Ancient and Brave, a mission-driven wellness brand with an award-winning range of collagen, MCT oil, and nootropic blends. From supporting menopausal symptoms to supercharging your energy, Ancient and Brave's products are pure, potent, and easy to make part of your daily, morning, or wellness ritual.
Personally, I find the true collagen really easy to take, and I normally add it into my morning coffee, which is a habit that I already have ingrained. I'm never going to miss my morning coffee, and it's definitely a way to maintain consistency.
Yes, well, I love collagen too, and I've been using Ancient and Brave for a very long time, and I do use it with clients, I use it for myself. I do actually love the cacao blends. I love the collagen one with cacao. Delicious.
Yeah, and what really sets them apart is their sustainability. They're a B Corp as well as a member of the 1% for the Planet. This means donating 1% of all sales to environmental causes that protect the planet, because collective action adds up. So buying their products means you're supporting the planet too. Visit 1percentfortheplanet.org to learn more. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Wellness Breakdown.
This week we are looking at the rise of semaglutide, which was originally a treatment for diabetes but is now widely used for weight loss.
It would be a good idea, Rose, don't you think, to just kick off with saying what is semaglutide? Because a lot of people, I think, probably are maybe familiar with its trade names, things like Ozempic and Wegovy, but essentially it's what's called a GLP-1 agonist. So that means that it helps to essentially make us feel fuller, slowing down gastric emptying, which means that it suppresses appetite. And it works mostly, most of the GLP-1 we produce is actually in our gut, but we do produce some in our brain and in our pancreas. So it controls our appetite from a gut and sort of neurological level.
Yeah. As we said, it was first developed for type 2 diabetes and it came out in 2017 and it was very effective at controlling blood sugar. So then last year it was approved for use for obesity as an obesity treatment in this country, which it is very effective for that. It's just, I suppose, why I'm speechless is because of its misuse.
I think there is obviously a lot of information out there around both Ozempic and Wegovy. And just to differentiate, Ozempic is still typically or mostly used for type 2 diabetes, and Wegovy is the one that's being used for obesity. So it is the same drug. Essentially, they're both semaglutide, but they're just on different dosages. So Wegovy actually tends to be higher, which is the one that's used for obesity. And I guess why it's got more popularised is because there have been some major celebrities coming out and talking about it and, you know, really screaming the benefits. You know, Elon Musk has been one of the biggest endorsers, I feel. Boris Johnson apparently has used it. So there's quite a lot of people coming out in the media saying that they've used it.
Sharon Osbourne is, if she has lost so much weight and she can't put it back on. There's quite a lot of pushback against it of celebrities who are saying they wish they'd never taken it. So it's interesting, you know, because I suppose that's where a lot of the popularity of some things comes from is looking at that type of media feed. So yeah, and you know, the problem is from a very basic level is that people who actually need the medication now can't get the medication, thinking of diabetics in particular.
Yeah, plus it's skyrocketed in terms of price as well.
Yeah,
you know, let's be honest, I mean, we'll go into our thoughts around this, which, spoiler alert guys, is going to be mostly negative. But, you know, it can be game changing for some people and have marked results. And, you know, we're not here to obviously not judge people, very overweight people who struggle with their weight. It's because it's definitely not a lack of dedication or that they're not doing all the things that some people who don't struggle to manage their weight are doing. But they just might have a lot of kind of metabolic issues. So it means that kind of like the kind of healthy diet and exercise doesn't necessarily work. And we're talking about obesity here. So, you know, there are some people that this is really, it has been totally life changing.
Yeah. We always say this, it takes time and resources, which lots of people don't have, especially the NHS doesn't really have it, to go and investigate and try and help further upstream with things that are affecting or impacting metabolic syndromes. And so Ozempic and semaglutide is kind of like a quick fix for those things rather than actually going to find out what is going on further upstream. But I think mostly our negativity around this is because of it's feeding into that crash diet culture. And I think that that's where the issues lie. I suppose the first client I had who was taking it was probably about 2.5 years ago. And then I've seen that slowly increase, not only in my clinic, but, you know, all around me, people taking it. I mean, I think the thing for me, which I'm just going to get out of the way because I need to get it off my chest, is that I have a huge issue with the pharmaceutical industry and the food industry, because the food industry, the food lobby want to push crappy ultra-processed food. And now the pharmaceutical industry have got a pharmaceutical solution. So that's my big issue. And I know that sounds a bit conspiratorial, but it's just like, okay, we're going to push all this crap food and then we're going to give you a pharmaceutical solution so you can carry on eating that shit food.
I agree that we need to not be naive to something like that. Where is the longer term plan in putting somebody on one of these drugs? Are they being given sufficient nutritional advice to go along with that? My feeling is probably not generally, like your GP is probably not going to provide that. They just don't have the time, actually. So it feeds back into what you're saying. It's like that kind of quick fix, but not actually addressing, you know, some of the underlying things. But I think let's talk a little bit about what actually happens when you take the drug. So, because actually what happens when you take either one of them really, but let's say Wegovy, if it's a weight loss thing, is that there is a rapid weight loss. So it's not like when you might use other, even calorie restricted diets, really. I mean, we could have a whole episode about why those don't work, but it's this rapid weight loss that actually happens. And the problem with that is that you can't control where the weight loss is coming from in terms of body composition. So typically when you look at people that lose weight on these drugs, most of the weight loss comes actually from lean muscle mass tissue, which is not good, because then what you end up with is being skinny fat. What we want to do is mitigate that as much as possible. So when you lose weight in a more gradual, slower way, you can in some ways control where the weight loss is coming from through doing things like, this is where I know I feel like I'm on the bandwagon for like strength and resistance training. But what you want to do is maintain that lean muscle mass. So if you are taking this drug for whatever reason, you do need to be making sure that your nutrition plan prioritizes protein to support muscle maintenance. So I think that's also an important thing to talk about. Also, what happens when you take the drug side effects wise, Rose?
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, following on from what you just said, nutrient deficiency is a real thing here, because you don't have an appetite. So then you are taking on board less food, therefore less nutrients. And so sort of as a side effect, I mean, you probably don't even know you're doing it. You probably, you know, people are becoming nutrient deficient through it. If I do have a client who, you know, and as we always say, we're not doctors, so we would never interfere with someone's medication. And if someone is on Ozempic or semaglutide, then I would be really trying to encourage them to have really focusing on their protein intake, but also their you know, the fruit and veg, getting all the little nutrients in.
Yeah, no, totally. I completely agree with that. And, you know, other side effects, which typically one would expect to be gastrointestinally related, would be things like nausea. I think nausea is the biggest one, as far as I'm aware. And then things like diarrhea, constipation. Some people have even, there are some things around intestinal blockages, probably because, again, there's that slowing down. And things like hypoglycemia, probably, yeah, relate to the fact that, sorry, my dog is also wanting to get in on this conversation. I don't know why. She obviously has very clear views around semaglutide. Low blood sugar levels also is another one.
The other thing that, you know, and I know it was done on rodents, but there has been some research around thyroid and cancer of the thyroid.
Yes.
And if you think about what you're doing to your system is, you know, you're not taking in fuel. So your body doesn't have the fuel it needs to proceed with everything it should do. So as Eve said, you know, you're taking nutrients, which is why you end up with slight sarcopenia, because you're robbing nutrients from the rest of the body, i.e. your muscles and fat storage. And in the long term, that is going to mess up your metabolism. So when we're going to talk a bit more about coming out of semaglutide, but it does mean that your metabolic signaling is going to be on the conservative side. And so your thyroid slows down. So when you go back into the world post-semaglutide, you might have a lower basal metabolic rate.
No, it's 100%, because actually, frustratingly, I guess, incredibly frustratingly for people that are wanting to lose weight, our body does everything to prevent us doing that. Like, it really does, because this is over millennia evolved to, you know, not want us to lose weight so we can survive periods of famine. And that, unfortunately, that system is still very much in place. That's why typically when people do extreme calorie restricted diets, they always bounce back to the weight that it's like rebound weight gain. There's very few people that have been on, and this has been done over huge amounts of cohort studies over many years and in many different demographics, that, you know, typically it's very few people that manage to keep off weight loss when they've been on calorie restricted diets. And this is a similar-ish type of thing. So the other thing I think to be mindful around is that when you start as any of these drugs, I mean, as far as I'm aware, you stay on them then. It's not like a question of kickstarting a weight loss program. Although before we were getting on here, Rose, you were mentioning that they are using it for short courses. But as far as I was aware, you have to keep taking the drugs, because when you stop taking the drugs, you gain the weight. But I guess that's, again, to do with, are you addressing underlying factors? Because what we're talking about is satiety here, really, which kind of leads me off on a bit of a tangent here, because satiety is not just about GLP-1. There are other hormones in our gut, like cholecystokinine, things like leptin. These are also signals that produce in our gut and our brain that basically tell us, oh, I've had enough now, I'm full. So that drug is not addressing any of those things, which is where I know I keep banging on about gut health, but let's be honest, you know, all of these are produced in our gut, and there's a lot of things related to gut health and weight generally, but certainly to do with how we manage some of these appetite, hunger and satiety hormones as well. It's interesting why they might be using them now as these short-term things, because I think it's the same thing of going on a crash diet, right? I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, well, I think that's where you know, when we talk about the use and misuse of semaglutide, there is a use for it for sure, but this is where the misuse comes, because it is being used for a crash diet. And before we came on, we were talking about the idea of, if you've got a wedding in 3 weeks' time, I can imagine the psychology of, like, I don't care what happens after, I just want to be ready for that wedding. Mm. I get that. But I would imagine you can do a lot in 3 weeks as well without going on it. But that's, I think, where people are using it for these short courses. And I do know that people are using it for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of yo-yoing around it. And that comes back to exactly what you were saying. And that is where the misuse, I think, is coming in. But the potential damage it can do, I think, around, especially also around the relationship of food. It feels like we're having a conversation about a yo-yo diet in the 80s. That's what it feels like to me.
100%.
You know, when you're talking about, say, leptin, for example, if you don't eat fat, you don't get that feeling of satiety. So you keep on producing leptin. So the fat-free craze, when everyone was eating no fat, they were putting on weight. We're putting on more and more weight because you're not getting those hormones are not being released to tell the brain that you're full and you don't need any more. So it just feels like that sort of conversation. And I think it's weird to be having it in this day and age. And this is where I go back to pharmaceutical companies.
No, and I, do you know what? That's such an important point. Like, I really do. Like, I completely agree. Like, I feel like we're just regressing back into that really toxic diet culture again. It's like fetishizing thinness and like doing anything to attain thinness. I mean, it's like, well, you know, is that going to ultimately make you happy? But some people might say yes. But then again, we've got to question the whys of that. Like, as a culture, are we now promoting again that this trumps anything else above health, even like just to be thin, that we need to take these drugs? And that's, I totally agree with you. I really feel like there is, there may be some conspiracy, but I do think there's some, been some major steps forward in terms of our thinking around this whole subject. And it feels like we are definitely regressing back, because this could totally lead to dysfunctional eating patterns, for sure. And body image and all that type of thing. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. And also, I suppose if you think about the idea just, you know, of mental health and where we get our, you know, mental health is very connected to the gut, but it's also connected to things like eating fats and eating fiber. So if you're not eating, full stop, then you're not getting those things.
Yeah. For me, I mean, we do one part of the equation in terms of how do we help somebody to have a healthier relationship with their food. And part of that is education around the types of food they should be eating. So, I mean, I even had a client this week who was massively measuring macronutrients and being really militant about it and really low fat. And I said to him, well, the reason why you keep wanting sugar is because you're not eating fat, because fat is the most satiating macronutrient. So I guess it's like re-educating around that side. But I think there's a whole chunk which is all related to our mindset and our emotional relationship with our food and our bodies. And that is much more complex, and that needs a totally different professional. And that is about talking therapy or, you know, all of that stuff, to kind of really kind of dig into what is our relationship on an emotional and spiritual level. So I think it's so much more complex, and that's where I feel like to drum it down to one what are they called like skinny jabs or whatever they were, fat jabs, I mean, I just think it's so belittling a whole hugely complex situation. There have been some small studies to try and put something positive into this around its potential positive impact on certain addictions, because we know that addiction is incredibly hard to treat. So there were some small studies around that related to that, because the drug itself works on that mesolimbic dopamine reward system, and that's what we're talking about here really. So there has been some things around that, but I honestly, I'm really struggling to find an awful lot, because I just don't think it deals with the bigger complex issues that surround weight and weight management. Again, that's a different conversation to people that are obese, because this is where these drugs are honestly game-changing, life-saving in some regards. Exactly. But I think for the majority of where we're talking about the negative impacts, it is more related to that.
And I suppose the other thing that concerns me and you, I know, Eve, is the side effects that are, there are more and more and more coming out, and the damage that it can do in the long term. And we've highlighted a few of them. So it's sort of like it's a quick fix with long-term problems. You get long-term problems. So I just would love all of you to be really aware of that. And also, if you do really have problems with weight and weight management, sort of trying to find out why. You know, there are lots of different ways to eat, that's for sure, and something will work for you. It's just trying to find which way works. And also the idea of community, happiness. Food is a very joyful thing for a lot of us.
Yeah.
The thing is that actually most of us eat absolutely bad. Not really badly, but you know what I mean? There's a lot of it around, and it's almost not our fault, because it's being pushed in your face all day, every day. But just making a few switches, like eating better quality protein, eating more veg, it might make the world a difference. I know it sounds really simple and eye-rolly, but it's true.
No, it's not. It's actually really important, because I think there's a tendency for us to jump ahead to things, work on the details and find the nuance, but actually we're not doing the basic things. Because at the end of the day, you know, if you have a diet full of these ultra-processed foods, it's going to be highly inflammatory. And inflammation is one of the big key drivers for weight and obesity and all those things anyway. So, you know, again, it comes back down to this whole calories in, calories out, which is still being pushed by the government. I mean, I don't know why. It really fucking annoys me. And you're not talking about quality of foods. Like, calories for me are barely useful as a tool. Really.
Yeah,
I mean, really. They can give some indication, but they're in no way are they telling you anything about the quality of the food. So I think it's really, really important to highlight that, Rose, honestly.
Yeah.
And if you have a diet that's full of fibre, by the way, that's also going to delay gastric emptying because fibre does slow that down anyway. So if you're talking, which is what this drug is essentially doing. So, yeah, having lots of fruit and veg, having good quality whole grains, nuts and seeds, they're all going to provide sources of fiber. And like how many people are necessarily doing that? They might be like, oh, OK, well, I'll just eat what I want and take this drug. And we also don't even know really what the longer term effects are of this drug because it's so new on the market anyway. So you are kind of risking, playing a risky game, genuinely.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, it's so true what you say, because when you're talking about the nuances or the, you know, it reminds me of supplements when I see people and all they want are supplements. They don't want to change the idea of what they eat or, you know, doing more movement or their stress, which is also really linked with weight gain. They just want me to give them a supplement. And that's almost what this Ozempic semaglutide is. It's a people are treating it like a panacea and it's definitely not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've bashed that quite properly. We've given it a good hammering, haven't we?
We've given it a good hammering. I mean, look, I'm sure there's lots of things that have sparked.
Here we go. This is the caveat where we start going.
Yeah, exactly. So we don't get sued by pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, exactly.
I think a lot of what we're saying is basically sensible advice. And for us, obviously, we believe in a more holistic approach, but more of a kind of treat the cause, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Not the symptoms. And that's what this really comes back down to. So ideally, you would go and work with a practitioner who can help navigate this, look at your metabolic health. Are there maybe underlying hormonal conditions that you don't know about? Like if you've got an underactive thyroid, for instance, that's been undiagnosed, that's going to impact on your weight. If you've got, I mean, we can refer back to our adrenal episode. If there's a lot of stress and cortisol happening, that's also good. So it's about really being a bit more, well, a lot more open-minded to the fact that this is not just one thing, and that if you can work with a practitioner, it's going to help you to work on the fundamentals. There's all these systems that are interplaying, and it's not just about calories in, calories out, let's get a skinny jab.
As you said, fibre is really important. Eat fibre at the beginning of the meal. It helps slow down the gastric emptying. Move more throughout the day. Do some breath work. Reduce sugar. And I personally would steer more towards protein and vegetable fat diet and leave the grains a little bit so you're not having grains for breakfast, lunch and dinner, because a lot of people are very grain-based. And do it for 3 months. I bet you'll feel a whole lot different if you can do that for 3 months. And, you know, it's a gradual process. It will be more successful. And I mean, that is a very general, but those are five things that would work for most people. Don't you think, Keith?
Yes, I do. I agree. I'd add one more in there, which would be do things to proactively activate that mesolimbic system, the dopamine reward system that isn't food involved. So whatever that looks like for you, it could be putting some music on and dancing around your living room. I love a bit of domestic disco.
Me too.
Exercise is one that also creates some of those endorphins, also really good at helping you better improve the insulin response. You know, it could be going painting, it could be reading, it could be listening to a podcast, but anything that's going to proactively trigger off that mesolimbic system without necessarily being food related. Yeah. That'd be the other one.
Great advice. Okay, guys, so now we've talked you out of taking semaglutide and given you a life plan, we're now going to look at some emails. Hi, ladies. Just listening to your episode on vitamin D. I spend 6 months of the year in France, so I thought I was getting enough vitamin D, but tests from the doctors showed I was still deficient, and so I started taking drops. Loved your podcast on this. So many people I speak to have no idea about it. Alison, thank you, Alison. That's funny, isn't it? Because you just think vitamin D is very common knowledge now, but so thank you for letting us know.
I'm wondering where she lives in France as well.
I know, if it's Brittany she might not get so much sun. Saint-Tropez.
Oh, that's true. Okay, next one. Hi, Rose and Eve. I was listening back to some of your past episodes and I noticed you refer to not drinking coffee first thing in the morning, something to do with cortisol. Can you explain the reasons behind that? Our cortisol is what basically wakes us up in the morning. It's the hormone that governs that waking part of the sleep-wake cycle. So if we then add in caffeine, what that's doing is spiking adrenaline really further, so it can actually then exacerbate that cortisol response, and not just then but in terms of throughout the day, so how in terms of how it affects the overall circadian rhythm. So nobody's saying don't have your coffee. I mean, I love my coffee, but maybe think about if you're somebody that's highly stressed, so I'll caveat that, then maybe think about having it after you've had some food later in the morning.
Yeah, let your waking cortisol do its thing before you stimulate yourself further. And that sounded rude, sorry. Right. I really, actually really enjoyed that. I feel actually like I've vented and I feel like I've lightened my load by dumping all of that on here.
I loved hearing your rants about it actually, Rose, because I think you've raised some really valid points, to be honest. And I think it's something people do need to, no, genuinely, really need to think about it. This is such an emotive subject.
I hope you guys enjoyed it. I would be really interested to know if any of you have, you know, we'd love to hear any semaglutide stories. It would be lovely if you followed the show. You can go to the show page and click on the plus sign. Also, we are on YouTube, the Wellness Breakdown Pod, if you want to see us. You can also email us at info@thewellnessbreakdown.co.uk or message us on our Instagram.
Yeah.
We will see you next week and I really look forward to it.
See you next week, guys.